This is an eavesdropping conversation. I'm Juliet Fraser, and today my guest is Daphne Vicente Sandoval. Welcome, Daphne.
Thank you.
I wonder if you can begin by introducing yourself. How do you define yourself as a musician or perhaps as an artist?
So yeah, I mean, I think I would define myself primarily as a bassoon player who dedicates herself to contemporary music performance. Yeah, my musical background is in classical music performance. And in the last decade, more or less, I've developed a rather specific approach to my instrument, which is based mainly on intuitive exploration of its very complex acoustical properties. This instrumental practice has led me to engage in long-term collaborations with a few composers who share my musical sensibility and interests. Hélène Radigue, Phil Niblock, to name a few. Mm. And so these collaborations have led me to the creation of a body of solo pieces for bassoon.
You mentioned sensibilities there, shared sensibilities with these collaborators. Are there particular certain processes or areas of interest that you're attracted to, would you say?
I'm interested, I guess, mostly in repetition. So in the experience of playing over and over again the same few pieces. I mean, I think there is a lot of music out there at the moment, and I don't really feel the need to create a lot of new works, for example, and to add more to the overwhelming amount that is put out there into the world each day. So, of course, to have this experience of repeating and playing over and over again the same few pieces, you need pieces that can evolve and grow over time.
Yeah.
And pieces that have the potentiality of embracing transformation, of reshaping themselves, concert after concert, according to circumstances.
Yeah. Is there a piece that you've been traveling with now for a particularly long time? One that feels like sort of the oldest friend?
Yeah, I would say, for example, the Occam 13 of Hélène Radigue is one of those pieces, and also some of Jakob Ullmann's solos, Münster Stern, for example. Mm-hmm. Those pieces were first created in 2014, 15. So it's almost now, almost 10 years that I've been playing them on a quite regular basis. And for some of these pieces, I actually even play them at home every day.
Oh, wow.
Almost every day.
This is fascinating. To me, it gives a whole new angle on the word practice, both in terms of our daily practice or preparation as a musician, but also in terms of the broader practice that we create as an artist. And it makes me think much more about, a daily discipline of mindfulness or for me, a near daily practice of yoga, that this is something that you're dropping back into that material every day and that it's really becoming part of your body, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's really to go deeper and deeper into one thing and see how the richness unfolds over long stretches of time. Yeah, it's also like a bit questioning the boundaries between private and public practice. I mean, music as a private practice and as a public practice, which I found quite interesting. I mean, as a result of the pandemic and also right before the pandemic, I actually gave birth to a child. So it's been a sequence of events that led to the fact that I travel less, I perform less. So music has also become more like something I just do for myself at home every day, rather than being, just a public, I mean, it's never just a public practice, but it's not so like pointed towards that at the moment for me.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm wondering, how did you end up in this sort of area? Coming from a conventional classical training, were there particular doors that suddenly opened or particular meetings that sort of led you down this path, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. As a double reed player, I experience every day like the inner instability and variability of reeds and the fact that the material that I use to craft sound has its own agency in a way.
Yeah.
And when you perform classical music, you're basically battling like against this inbuilt inconsistency of the read. Yeah, I'm a bit of a perfectionist myself. As a student, when I studied classical music in Paris Conservatory, the way I was taught my instrument and classical music performance is that there was a standard, a bit of perfection that you needed to reach and that you would, you know, either succeed or fail to reach. So yeah, that experience of trying to master, you know, like a certain repertoire that I felt both close to, but at the same time, I always felt a bit the distance, you know, with the classical music tradition. And at the same time, trying to do that with my instrument that has this kind of inner volatility built into it was something that led to a kind of crisis when I actually finished my classical studies. So it was really thanks to like chance encounters afterwards with, for example, the composer Jacob Ullmann that I already mentioned, that I very gradually could make sense of my years of study as a classical music performer, and that I could gradually build a space where I could actually like live as a musician. I don't know if it makes sense to you.
Yeah, it does make sense. It does make sense. And I read somewhere that you've done quite a lot of thinking about contingency and fragility, which, if I understand correctly, that's really what you're talking about with the materiality of the reeds and the particular characteristics of the instrument. So yeah, it does make sense. And I totally connect to that struggle with perfectionism as part of the classical music training. I think you know that the festival topic this year is failure. So you've kind of led me right into that area. Thank you very much. How do you feel about failure now as part of the practice that you currently have?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the music I like to perform, and I perform, I mean, the music of Jacob, of Eliane, and most of these composers. I mean, for me, my experience is that it's a music that locates itself outside of paradigms, like right or wrong, good or bad, and that really embraces like singularity, contingency, and the possibility of failure as core elements. So yeah, for me, it has been really a life-changing experience to start working with these composers. I mean, I feel it's a whole different practice and relationship to the instruments, and also as a performer, a very different kind of perceptive experience.
So does this begin with conversations between you and the composers? Are you talking explicitly about these questions of contingency or instability?
No, I mean, actually, in the case of Jacob and Eliane, I became to that realization really afterwards.
I mean, years, the process of working
years with them, after starting to work with them. I mean, at the same time, I feel like words like fragility and failure have become a bit of kind of catchy words that you see all over these days in artistic statements. And often you see them applied to art that engages rather superficially with those concepts. It's a bit like the margins have become like the new surface, you know, like my experience is still that most people as performer or listeners don't actually really want to engage with radical forms of music that really takes the risk to collapse or simply to not happen. So yeah, I mean, after doing all this a bit reflection on contingency and fragility, I mean, recently I've become a bit more cautious about using those words.
Yeah. I'm thinking about notation, and I'm wondering if there are any general comments that you have really about notation for the sort of music that you're making.
I mean, as you know, for example, Eliane's music is not notated. And that was, as a performer, my first encounter was like creating a piece bypassing like the notation. And at that time, I was still quite involved in the improvised music scene. So it was really quite interesting for me to actually work on a piece. I mean, something that was clearly a work that was not using notation and at the same time was clearly not improvised.
Yeah.
And then, the other very strong experience is maybe, my work with Jakob Ullmann. I mean, I'm sorry, I always go back to the same people, in which, in general, Jakob's pieces, it's very complex material. I mean, the score is quite complex. For example, there is this one solo piece that I've recorded and performed quite a lot, which is called Solo 2. And the score presents itself as a very fragmented material of like very different elements, like drawings, different a set of pitches, text instructions. So very kind of heterogeneous material that then you need as a performer to assemble and to make the score yourself.
And I know you compose your own music. Well, is that the word that you use, compose? And how do you approach notation in your own music?
Oh, no, I'm not a composer. Okay. I think I would never say that of myself. I mean, I didn't mention when you first asked me about I would define myself. I mean, I have mostly this practice as a performer of contemporary music. And then in parallel, in the last decade, I have been working with microphone feedback. So first improvising with other musicians and then more recently focusing more on a solo, like on an electroacoustic performance solo. And so out of that work with the feedback, some ideas have unfolded, and that's practice with microphone feedback, which is of course also about volatility and fragility and something that is always different each time you play it. These different experiences, both in my instrumental practice as a bassoon player and then in with this feedback practice, I've led to having some ideas, you know, about sound and about. So lately I've done this one piece called Minus Circuits, which was released by the GRM, and kind of reflection on this last decade of work with microphone feedback. But so the ideas really come out of my practice with my relationship to sound.
I'm wondering, what are you listening to at the moment? What's on your pile of CDs, or what's in your headphones when you're around the place?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually going to disappoint you because I have a 5 years old that's at home, so I mostly listen to children's songs. And I mean, in general, I don't listen to a lot of music. I mean, part of it is that, living with a child, you actually don't have a lot of moments of silence. So when I'm actually on my own, I tend to not listen to things, I mean, to music.
That doesn't disappoint me at all. I think it's a great answer. I wanted to end, Daphne, whether you can tell us a little bit about what you're planning for your eavesdropping performance.
So yes, to present my work, I thought it was important to present a bit those two different sides of my relationship with sound, which is as a performer of contemporary music pieces, and then also a bit my own work. And also acoustic and amp, you know, my relationship both to acoustic music and more like electroacoustic, right, amplified music. So I will play a piece. I don't know yet which one, but I think it's very likely going to be Elian Radig Okam 13. And then I will present my work with a microphone feedback.
Fantastic. I can't wait to hear it. Daphne, thank you so much for chatting with me. It's really been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Listeners can come and hear Daphne's performance in the Eavesdropping Festival on the closing night. That's Sunday, the 24th of March at Café Otto. You have been listening to an eavesdropping conversation. Our new jingle was composed for us by Iza Otoya.